the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number two of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Today, the program brought to you by Oak Ridge Nissan, right here on the Turnpike, where it meets up with Illinois Avenue. And you can come on out, say hello, as I'm right here, and you can take advantage of their sizzling summer sale. We very much appreciate our friend John McClain, normally a Wednesday guest. He slid his appearance to Friday today, and he joins us now on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Always appreciate your time. And since we last spoke, we had a caller about this earlier this week, but one of my favorite Houston Astros, Bob Watson, passed away. And I was just wondering, not only is he memorialized for his incredible role in the Bad News Bears and breaking training, but just tell me, what were your thoughts on Bob Watson?
That's funny. God plays his whole career. He's a good player. He works in front offices as a general manager of the league office, and he's known for the Bad News Bears. I think Bob Watson was one of the all-time great guys. His nickname was Bull, and he was not a power hitter. He was a contact hitter. He went through some bad years here, but he was a portrait of dignity. Everybody respected him. He ended up being up at the league office in New York and missed by a whole lot of family and friends.
John, we moved you because of the passing of John Majors, and I wonder if you had any much contact or any good stories about Coach Majors that you recall.
I have two stories about Johnny Majors. The first one was in 1972. Baylor football was so bad, a lot of people wanted to abolish it. A coach that had been good, John Bridgers, got fired because he went 5-5. They brought in LSU defensive coordinator Bill Beal, who's one of the worst coaches in the history of sports at any level. And I was in high school then, but you could go to the stadium and get your own section. You could do anything. And so a lot of people wanted to fold the program, but they decided, okay, they were going to give it one more shot. And I'm talking about a Baylor program in the 50s that beat Tennessee in the Sugar Bowl when Tennessee was favored. And they used to be good, but this was awful. So they started interviewing candidates in the Houston Post, which used to be my competition before we bought them and fold them. One day had this big headline, Johnny Majors to become Baylor's next coach. And we got so excited. Johnny Majors, the great running back, Johnny Majors, All-America, he's going to come to Waco and coach. Well, no, he wasn't. That was one of those kind of guy got bad information. They played it up. We were devastated. 10 people turned them down after Johnny Majors, including, to show you how desperate they were, a guy named Rudy Feldman at New Mexico. Now, if you're trying to hire a head coach in New Mexico to resurrect your program in the Southwest Conference, that's as low as it goes. Even Rudy Feldman turned them down, and they ended up with their 11th choice, a guy who was hired. We knew nothing about him. We heard his name was Grant Teeth, and it took us a while to learn it was Grant Taft, and he became one of the greatest coaches in Southwest Conference history, two-time National Coach of the Year, helped Baylor win the conference for the first time in 50 years, beat Texas the first time in 20, but the Houston Post blew it with Johnny Majors. And so the next time that I was, this is the time I met Johnny Majors, when Bud Adams was going into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, I went for his induction, and they had a luncheon to honor Bud and the other honorees, and Johnny Majors was there. And I went over, and he wore big Coke bottle glasses, didn't he?
Yeah, he had big glasses.
Had trouble seeing. And so I went over to him, and I introduced myself, and I was waiting to see if he was friendly. I was going to bring up this Houston Post story, and he was very friendly, and I brought it up, and he said he remembered it because when it came out that he'd taken a job, he was just bombarded by people, and of course it wasn't true. But I thanked him for his consideration. Such a first-class act, and I know what a big deal it is, the death of the great Johnny Majors.
Did he even interview at Baylor? Was there anything to it?
I'm guessing he interviewed because his name was on a list. And this reporter from the Houston Post was their top columnist who was very tuned in to the Southwest Conference. His name was Jack Gallagher, the late Jack Gallagher. So it's one of those deals like in a movie Slapshot when Paul Newman told his players he planted a story with the guy that covered the team that was alive, but the players, he wanted them to believe it. And he said in the bar, hey, if Dickie Dunn wrote it, you know it's got to be true. So we thought if Jack Gallagher wrote it, you know it's got to be true.
Wow.
But it wasn't.
There have been a few college athletes returning to campus testing positive. If that happens in the NFL, what's the NFL plan going forward, John?
That is scary. Those 50 Alabama players showed up for an informal workout and five of them tested positive. Mm-hmm. And what they're worried about, you know, players are young. Young people can still die from the coronavirus, but not nearly as susceptible as older people like me. Not you guys, of course, because y'all are still young.
That's
so,
right.
Like, say the Astros, they got Dusty Baker, a 70-year-old coach with several pre-existing conditions. They got a pitching coach, Brent Strom, who's 71 with pre-existing conditions. And yet they got a coach, they got to manage and coach the pitching staff. So I don't know how they're going to do it, but right now, the NFL does not know. The NBA, which we're all watching, they say in their bubble in Orlando that if a player tests positive, they're going to pull him out, but not quarantine his teammates. So my question is, why have these tracers? Why trace that who a person that's tested positive has come in contact with? Well, you know on an NBA team who he's come in contact with is coaches, his teammates, the trainer, the equipment people, and plus I'm guessing there'll be media people over there, and if they're going to cover the team, they've got to get tested too. So what I'm leery of is there was a great thing on Bryant Gumbel on Real Sports that a woman who was a nurse in Brooklyn, she was one that was in the middle of everything, and she got the COVID-19, but she couldn't get a test. They said they didn't have enough. And then she lived with her sister, another nurse. She affected her, and the sister died, and the Brooklyn Nets all got tested. And they were asking her, is that fair that you, who are right there on the front lines, didn't get tested, or your sister, but a sports team did? And, of course, she was not real happy about that. And if that's the case and people are still dying and because they can't get tested on time. And another thing I've been told by doctors, 30% of the tests are wrong. And so I don't know what in the world they're going to do.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John, I don't think there's any question that this has been a very interesting week. It has been trying times for so many in so many different places. There have been peaceful protests. There have been rioting. There's been all kinds of things that now dot the landscape and have been a part of now a conversation, discourse, however you want to term it, in the National Football League and among other sports leagues. You put together a piece that compared the unrest now to 1968, and I'm just wondering, what do you see in terms of similarities, and what do you see in significant differences?
Thank you very much, John. I was a sophomore in high school in 1968, which is the most tumultuous year in our history, not involving a war. And if people are wondering, Google 1968 timeline and see all the major events that happened against a backdrop of student unrest, protest on so many campuses against the Vietnam War, civil rights movement, gender equality. They were having demonstrations in every city. And my high school began with Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King being assassinated in Memphis by James Earl Ray, a white supremacist, and it ended in 1970 with the Kent State massacres, in which National Guardsmen opened fire on student protesters, killed four and wounded nine more, prompting Neil Young to write the great anthem, Four Dead in Ohio. And along those lines, all the things that happened, the Democratic National Convention, which was violence in Chicago and a trial that lasted a year, the Chicago 7. I'm worried that the Republican convention is going to be that way because so many people are going to come out against Donald Trump, and I'm worried about violence. I'm worried about every protest at every athletic event. And the thing we had then was sports. And we had sports all year round in 1968 as kind of an outlet, and now we don't. Hopefully we will, but it's still not going to be like anything we witnessed before because of the coronavirus. So I think that this fall is going to be a fall like we've never experienced in our history. And if people want to know what that's like, go back to 1968. And something that struck me, the most enduring sports picture from 68 was the Olympics in Mexico City, where Tommy Smith and John Carlos were getting their medals for the gold and bronze medals on the platform, and they raised their right hand, wearing black gloves in the air, and bowed their heads, and they were protesting racial injustice, police brutality. And you talk about vilified all over the world. They stripped them of their medals. They sent them home, and they were protesting in 1968. Same things we're protesting today.
And the saying is, those that forget history are doomed to repeat it?
That's a good point. There's so much more. I did a column for Sunday with Warren Moon, the Hall of Fame quarterback who I've known since 1984, when he was started his first 10 years with the Oilers. And I've done several columns on race with Moon through the years, because when he got here, he experienced just terrible racism. The team was bad. He was the highest paid player in the league. He had to move his family from the stands into a box. And then he turned, you know, everybody loves him and his family is here. He lives in Seattle. And I asked him, I said, why has George Floyd's death struck a nerve in society much more than so many other deaths? And he said, because it's played out graphically, blatantly, almost a slow motion execution right before your eyes, and people of all ethnicities are aghast. He said African Americans have been putting up with this kind of treatment for years, but he said now people are seeing it, and he thinks it's good that so many different races are involved in the demonstrations and the rallies. And he said if people want to bring change, vote. Register to vote. He said athletes should make sure and tell young people, register to vote and then vote if you want to change legislation.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We'll get a break. Another segment with John coming up as you listen to Sports Talk today at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The king of beer, the king of sports. Live from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues. We've got more with John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, but we need to jump across the hall to our sister station, News Talk 98.7, for an update. Here is Eric Glasgow. Eric, hello.
Hello, sir. A judge has ruled that Tennessee must give all of its voters the option to cast ballots by mail due to the coronavirus pandemic. Davidson County Chancellor Ellen Lyle ruled that the state's limits on absentee voting during the pandemic constitute an unreasonable burden on the fundamental right to vote guaranteed by the Tennessee Constitution. The state argued such an expansion wouldn't be feasible for the 2020 elections. An appeal is likely. Tennessee delivered unemployment payments to more than 314,000 people last week as the number of new jobless claims continue to run much higher than normal amid the response to the new coronavirus outbreak. Businesses have begun to gradually reopen in recent weeks, and many workers have been able to return to their jobs, but the number of new weekly filings is still high, with some businesses remaining closed and employers cutting staff as they operate at a limited capacity. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee's administration is proposing another $284 million in budget cuts next year due to the economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic. The Republicans' team said Thursday the cuts would be in addition to the $397 million in recurring costs removed from the budget in March when the crisis began. Finance Commissioner Butch Ely says officials are adjusting based on a revenue shortfall of about $1.5 billion through next budget year. Ely also told lawmakers a court decision would effectively delay Lee's school voucher program for at least a year. The Knox County Health Department has released the latest COVID-19 numbers, 460 confirmed cases of COVID-19 here in the county. 92 cases are active, 363 people have recovered, and there is one person currently hospitalized with COVID-19. Five total deaths here in the county due to COVID-19. With your COVID-19 update, I'm Eric Glasgow for Sports Radio WNML.
Eric, appreciate all the information this week. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You do the same. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you very much. That's Eric Glasgow, and, of course, you can find out more information at newstalk987.com. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle.
John, which team will have the best record next year? Arizona Cardinals with Kyler Murray, Cleveland Browns with Baker Mayfield.
Boy, I think Cleveland has a whole lot more talent. And they've got an untested coach, Kevin Stefanski, being a head coach for the first time. There's no doubt they have more talent. And Mayfield is going into his third year. It's a key season for him. Murray, of course, going into his second. They don't have as good a defense, and they don't have as good an offensive line as the Browns have. Arizona plays in a tougher division, so I'm going to say Cleveland is going to have a better record.
Deshaun Jackson said that if no fans will be at games, they ought to mic the players. I also wonder if they'll need a bleep button at some point. Your thoughts on that?
I think that would be hilarious, but there would be so many bleeps going off, we wouldn't be able to tell what was going on. You know, situation comedies have had laugh tracks for years. We've come to accept it. I think there should be a little crowd background noise. You don't want people listening on TV to hear what players are saying to each other. You know, you just don't. And if you did, you're going to have a scroll at the bottom telling them, listen at your own risk, because we're talking about guys who knock the you-know-what out of each other and tell them they're going to do it, and after they do it, they want to rub it in their faces. They talk about their mamas and all that. I don't think you can tell players, okay, guys, now this can be picked up on TV. There's going to be a lot of kids watching, so please watch your language.
I think that would definitely be the case. John, what were your takeaways from what Bill O'Brien had to say when talking about, we'll just say, the discussion on race and equality in the NFL?
We were doing a Zoom call with Michael Thomas, a new player, 10-year veteran, a Houston native who graduated from Stanford. He's a great special teams player, and he's been very outspoken through the years. And so we're waiting to talk to Michael, and the PR, the VP, says a coach wants to come on and say something. And I knew O'Brien. He's from Boston. He went to Brown. He's very liberal. He doesn't talk about it, but I know he is. And so he just came on, and when he talked about his feelings about what's going on in society, and he was passionate and he was sincere. It's the only time Bill O'Brien's ever gotten universal praise locally and nationally, and unfortunately he doesn't get it in football, but it blew me away. It blew Michael Thomas away too, because O'Brien didn't take questions. He just thanked everybody. Then he introduced Thomas, and then he took off, and Michael Thomas was like, wow. And then the Texans owner Cal McNair put out a video later, which I like an owner putting out a video instead of a statement that's written for somebody else. And J.J. Watt was one of the first people to speak out about it right after George Floyd was killed. So I kind of feel like Texans have been at the forefront, many of them, including Deshaun Watson, participated in a 60,000-person march Tuesday through downtown, and there to honor Floyd and to seek justice for his death. And there was not any violent incidents when 60,000 people got together. I just hope, since none of them are practicing social distancing, that all these marches don't lead to a huge outbreak in the coronavirus.
With all of that has swirled about Drew Brees, do you think there's anything that's taken place this week that will attach itself to Drew through the upcoming season and beyond?
I do not. There have been some things that players have said before that were racist, and they had to play. Once you get on the field, the players don't have to like you. They don't have to believe in what you believe in, but they're all there together. I think that there's going to be so much going on in our society, in the NFL, and people aren't going to forget it. on Breeze, and it's too bad. He just gave $5 million to help people that need it for coronavirus. He's raised money to help rebuild New Orleans. He's one of the finest people I've ever known and heard of, and he apologized twice. I respect people's beliefs on both sides, and if you can't handle possible criticism, then you should keep your opinions to yourself.
John, what are you working on this week?
I've got a Warren Moon column on TexasSportsNation.com. I appreciate you talking about that column comparing now to 1968. I got more feedback on that thing than I've ever gotten on anything. A lot of people my age were talking to me about what they remember about 1968 and how extraordinary that year was, and not in a good way. And I'm be writing a lot next week. Got podcasts on there. Appreciate you guys having me as always. Thank you. I look forward to talking to you next Wednesday.
Stay safe. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. You as well. That's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We sure do appreciate him. We'll get a break. And Jimmy Himes, when we return, we'll catch up with Grace Christian track coach Brian Christopher as we want to recognize a special senior.
Yeah, Jackson Bostic had a terrific year. Unfortunately, unable to compete in the spring fling and track, where he's a great track athlete. And Coach Christopher will join us to talk about Jackson Bostic and others.
That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes, and it is our pleasure to welcome to the program the track coach at Grace Christian, Brian Christopher, as he joins us. And Jimmy, as we talked about before the break, we're doing something, as if folks were listening to the promotion over the during the break, we're trying to recognize and salute those unfortunate seniors that weren't able either to complete their season or complete their career this year as the class of 2020.
Yes, and Jackson Bostic is our selection, and Coach Christopher worked with Jackson, and we are joined by Brian Christopher, the track coach at Grace. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, John, Jimmy, for having me this afternoon.
Well, thank you for joining us. And just talk about the terrific track athlete that Jackson was and is. A three-sport athlete. He played football and basketball. Track was his specialty. When did you realize he had a special talent in track?
Well, I'll tell you, Jackson started his track career 5 years ago as an eighth grader. And I wasn't directly responsible with his coaching at that time, but I certainly did get to see him rise up. And I guess it really became quite evident his passion was always there. And it became quite evident his sophomore year. I mean, his career just really took off, and with great passion.
I think the hurdles are hard. I think running the 400 is hard. I think running the 300 hurdles is incredibly difficult. Talk about what it takes for somebody to excel in that race.
Well, you're exactly right. I've told Jackson a number of times, I think that's honestly the toughest race that there is. And it takes an incredible amount of stamina, incredible amount of speed, and an incredible amount of focus. And, yeah, that conversation he and I had a number of times, it's not for the weak-hearted, that's for sure. And I guess Jackson, you know, from the get-go, I guess for the first time he stepped over that hurdle, just fell in love with it and it took off from there.
What other track events was he really good at?
Oh, my word. He was probably our finest leg of our 4x4 relay team, and he was exceptionally good at that. There weren't too many events he didn't try. He ran the hurdle, ran the 200 a number of times. Exceptional athlete on the 200. Ran the 100. That's a tough one, Jackson ran the 100, And at the beginning of this season, before it got shortened, I got a big kick out of him. But he actually, in a kind of a pickup impromptu track meet we had, he actually ran the mile, and I thought he had fallen and bumped his head at that time. But it was actually a pretty decent mile time for someone that's a sprinter like Jackson.
Coach, very much appreciate your time. And tell me, you mentioned that he started competing in the eighth grade in this regard for Grace, and I'm just wondering, what was it like to just watch him embrace, grow, and develop as he went on to rewrite part of the school track record books, six-time All-State, two-time state champion, and also competes nationally?
Well, I'll tell you what, as a coach, it was incredible to watch that, just his drive and his passion. And, you know, every single time that he had a new record, new school record, I mean, he rewrote that record several times at Grace while he was there. As a coach, absolutely incredible. And it burnt in my memory of all the times watching him race, crossing that finish line for a win. The smile that he had on his face, just his true determination, really incredible to just get to watch him for 5 years.
What impact did he have on the program in regards to off the track? I mean, how would you say he was as a leader, a teammate? What about the intangibles that go into being such a fine young man?
Well, in addition to having those fast feet, that was probably even more incredible than watching him run. I remember at the beginning of this season, it really warmed my heart to see him out there after practice helping some of the younger athletes that were just coming up. We had some brand new hurdlers coming into the program this year, and Jackson was front and center, you know, showing him, you know, some of the things that he'd learned over a period of time, and to just sit back and watch that, for him to take, you know, extra time at the end of practice to help those athletes, could not have had a finer, you know, teammate and or leader, you know, on the team than Jackson. It's incredible.
Brian, who were some of the other track athletes you had that you were certainly disappointed that they were unable to compete in the state meet?
Well, we had a total of five seniors this year, and I tell you, my heart just goes out for those athletes. You know, it was their last season to run. My daughter was one, and it was included, that didn't get to have their season. We had some brand new athletes that were senior that were coming out for the first time, and it broke my heart to not have that season. I'm tickled to death that, you know, Jackson's going on and running at the next level there with Carson Newman. But the short season, we had several athletes, and of course, you know, everyone's just really disappointed that we didn't get to have our season this year.
Are there any others besides Jackson that are going to the college level?
Jackson was our only signee. Well, no, I take that back. I'm sorry. We actually had two female throwers, Rachel Clincham and Whitney Campbell, that signed with Western Kentucky. They're going on to throw shot and discus with those folks up there, and really tickled, you know, to see them get to go. And those are the athletes. Those are the ones that have actually signed to go on and participate as athletes at the next level.
Coach, what has this spring been like for you? I mean, considering how often you would have been knee deep in meet preparations and things like that at this point in time, and just concluded, I guess, the spring fling. How different was it to have such a quiet spring in regards to what is a very busy time for your schedule?
Well, I tell you, I didn't handle it very well at all. I was disappointed, just like the athletes were. And you know, the majority of the administration work had been done, and for me, the fun stuff was ready to begin. And the fun stuff for me was actually getting out there with the athletes, practices, the meets, you know, getting these, you know, getting these young men and women, you know, helping them meet their goals throughout the season. And yeah, the admin stuff was taken care of, and I guess that's the disappointing part, that that I didn't get to see these young men and women grow throughout the season.
As you mentioned, your daughter was in the mix. What has it been like to be at home with the family and with students not being in class but being at home? What has that experience been like?
Well, I tell you, my daughter handled it pretty well. Now, obviously disappointed, not much that we could have done about the overall situation. She's looking forward. She's enrolled at the University of Tennessee and be going there in the fall, and she's really looking forward to that. You know, I often say, hey, you know, we can't really look back. I mean, yes, we're all disappointed about it, but not much we can really do. But the things around the house here, not too bad, you know, fairly decent attitude, and just kind of ready to get on with it and get things back to a little bit of kind of normal.
Brian, I don't know if this would be difficult to answer this question, but were there any things that you learned during the pandemic that you think will help you as a track coach going forward?
Well, absolutely. You know, like I said, I didn't handle it very well at all. But, you know, stepping back away from it and taking a look at it, and the overall, you know, how we handle health issues, whether it's cross country or track, you know, you can't, even if it were not, the pandemic didn't even happen, you know, we just can't be too careful with the athletes in terms of their overall health. And, you know, I want them to be healthy from, you know, it's hard enough when they're out there jumping and sprinting, and, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, injuries that can happen with that. But to be sick because we just weren't cleanly, whether it was with water bottles, you know, athletes sharing water bottles or any variety of different things like that, there'll definitely be some policies in place, you know, going forward just to keep people healthy and not be sick.
We were talking about Jackson Bostic earlier, who's a three-sport athlete. And I wonder, from your perspective, do you like to see high school kids participate in multiple sports, or do you think they should focus on one?
No, absolutely. And in fact, that in years past, and it's getting much better, several of the stick and ball sports, you started to see athletes grow, tend to gravitate more toward that sport and say, you know, I'm just a basketball player, or I'm just a baseball player, or I'm just a football player. And it was really difficult. We saw the numbers really shrink over the years. And track has always been kind of that number two sport. If you play sports in the fall, then, you know, spring track rolls around, I'm doing track or I'm doing this. And that's something that, yes, I'm definitely, it gives you two things. It seems to let them decompress from a fall sport, whether it's basketball or football. They get to kind of forget about that a little bit. And oftentimes when that athlete goes back to that sport the following year, you know, I get comments, you know, from our football coach about, hey, what did you do to so-and-so? And I'm like, I don't know, what did I do? And he's like, man, he's so much faster. You know, he's engaged, he's ready to go. And it makes me feel really good inside. So I'm a big proponent of dual sports. And it gives the athletes time to kind of forget about that, put that on the back burner a little bit, and focus on something different.
Coach, as you mentioned, five seniors on this year's squad. What do you think about the future for the program and the underclassmen that now get ready to step into bigger and more prominent roles?
Well, I tell you, we're going to have a young team next year. From last year and this year, we've had a number of seniors to leave the program, and we're going to be really young next year. I think we're going to be looking pretty good. I've got a couple of female athletes that hopefully Looks like that Jackson has got them started in the right direction with the hurdles. I think they're going to be fantastic hurdlers, first female hurdlers we've actually ever had at Grace Christian Academy. And also got a distance runner there, young Riley Mahegan. You know, he is doing a fantastic job in the mile and the 2 mile, and also running cross country course there at Grace. So we've got some fantastic athletes. It's going to be a young team next year. But got a lot to look forward to with our younger athletes.
With one last word about Jackson, and we've talked about all the accomplishments that he's earned, made, records that he set. I think it's really cool that in talking about his career, he says that what he values the most, though, isn't the school records or state titles, but the fact that he's been able to make great friends at Grace that have supported him, and friends that he can call anytime to talk about anything. And I know as a coach, that's got to be such a rewarding feeling in terms of what the young man has and values, as opposed to perhaps not looking at his own laurels, but just looking at what he treasures moving forward.
Boy, you're not wrong. Seeing him at practice, you know, day in and day out, or even at school after the bell rings, you know, he's always got a group of people around him, just as friends as he can be. And I'll tell you, not just at Grace, but also his competitors on the track. You know, after a race, you know, always a handshake and or a hug, you know, congratulations. And, you know, after everybody gets a drink of water and gets their breath back to them, you'll see a group of them on the track out talking and just having a big old time, you know, after a big race. And boy, yeah, that's a fond memory of Jackson as well. It's just incredible to see that, just how magnetic he is.
Coach, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for giving us the lowdown on Jackson, as well as the Rams and your track program. And wish you and yours the very best. Stay well and safe throughout the summer, and can't wait to see everybody back on the track in the fall.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
All right,
thanks,
thank
coach.
You. That's Brian Christopher, the track coach at Knoxville Grace and Grace Christian Academy. And, Jimmy, I think very deserving. Jackson Bostic is our first winner in terms of recognizing the senior class of 2020.
Yeah, and what a terrific career. I mean, this doesn't count the senior year because he wasn't able to do a lot of stuff, but six-time All-State, two-time state champion in 300 hurdles, 10 school records. Got started in the eighth grade, and congratulations on getting a scholarship to Carson Newman.
Very much so. And we say thank you to Brandon's Awards and Engraving for making this happen. And, of course, you can go to our website, 991thesportsanimal.com, and you can nominate your athlete from the senior athlete from the class of 2020 that wasn't able to complete their season due to school closures. We pick one winner a week, and there will be an engraved plaque from Brandon. So, again, you can make your nomination at 991thesportsanimal.com, and we very much appreciate Coach Christopher in his time. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Tell the truth. Isn't this better than hearing Boston's More Than a Feeling for the 10,000th time? 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and it's a pleasure to be right back here in Oak Ridge this afternoon, and I get to be within 6 feet of Scott Gropp.
Holy smokes, Batman.
That's right. Holy social distancing.
I'll tell you what, folks, it has been one social bit of pandemonium around here. People are 6 feet, and I'll tell you, after a record-breaking month, almost 300 units last month, finishing number one again, thank you, East Tennessee, we're off to the races, John.
Yep, and we have our masked marauder, Chris Bernard, taking care of the engineering and everything. Great to have Chris on hand. But it has been. And again, you guys made the adjustment so fast just to alleviate fears and to make sure that you could keep doing business as you've done business for so long now and so well. It's a winning formula. You give people their space. It's not high pressure, and it's the opportunity to get more for theirs, pay less for yours, and that's how you make families customers, not just individuals.
That's exactly right. I'll tell you, it's Repeat Motors. Oak Ridge. I'll tell you, people coming from everywhere, bringing friends, family, relatives, and it really is Repeat, three-peat. I feel like the Patriots. I'm six-peat. Oh, should I have said that? Sorry, folks out there, especially you folks from Atlanta. Anyway, hey, listen, bottom line is this. You want a great deal on a car, you want to go to the number one volume Nissan dealer, the Wally World of Nissan dealers. That's Oak Ridge Nissan. You're not going to go to number two and pay more. I've never been doing this 36 years, never had a customer go, I want to pay more for my new Nissan. Have you guys ever heard that?
No. I insist you take this.
And I've never had a customer say, wait a minute, that's like $1,000 more than the other dealer down the street at Clingston Pike or the Alcoa Highway or Bill Clinton. Who? I mean, folks, you want more for your trade. You want to pay less for the new Nissan. You want to save thousands of dollars. You got to make a 10-minute drive.
That's right. Bad credit, slow credit. Even if you've been down 28-3 in the second half financially, everybody rides at Oak Ridge Nissan.
It's a fourth quarter, and there's no chance. Unless you make the 10-minute drive, and then you pull back the miracle and leave it a new Nissan.
And save?
And save thousands of dollars. Good analogy.
Thank you, Scott.
Make the drive, folks.
Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Hour number three of Sports Talk starts next, and we look forward to catching up with a couple of Vols that are looking forward to the baseball draft this next week. Garrett Crochet, Alaric Solari, join us next to start hour number three of Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.